There's also a political claim, a kind of political institutional claim about, so they're not just anti all those things, they're even anti any form of, I guess, what's the word I would call, like, even the idea of, like, vertical power. So, like, anything that is state institutions, anything that is, right, they even say in the same page that I was reading from before, they say, what is, on the other hand, entirely irrational and mad is the power of the state as it has evolved since the 60s. So, like, they're even anti any, they're anti everything. Anything that creates kind of stability or anything that creates kind of, that interferes with the ability for this radical creative energy, they seem to be against. And that seems like a really untenable position for many reasons that I've talked about in the past and for many reasons that I actually explore in my dissertation.
They so might.
When that comes out, I will refer you all to
they
it.
They might be pro Trotsky. They don't say that, but they are anti Lenin.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, let's, it's true. This is.
Okay, what is the best reading of this? The best.
Hold on. Can I really want to make a comment about this, though, because I'm going to channel my inner Jordan Peterson here and say that, like, this is, like, reading this, I can see why you would get this idea that there's, I know we can argue that it's not real postmodernism, but I feel like from reading this, you do get, like, I can hear, like, a Jordan Peterson type reads this and would be like, see, like, the leftist theory crazies, like, are just against everything, right? They're just, they have nothing and they're just encouraging our youth to be, I don't know, like, anti-everything, anti-anything, anti-everything, just protest against everything, be against everything. And I do see that, like, theory like this, I've been in departments where this kind of theorization is taken really, really seriously. When I was at York in environmental studies, there's an urban theorist who draws a lot on Hart and Negri and a lot of others, including Laclau and Mouffe, Radical Democracy. They take this shit seriously, and they do adopt this kind of edgy, perpetually against everything attitude that I kind of understand. So that's, so look, maybe there's a good part of that, which is, like, that you adopt a kind of critical perspective on things. But I mean, I think there is an argument for, like, what are you actually saying if that's the position you adopt all the time? Like, is there any substance underlying
it? They are
it?
Pro a few things. The problem is, I don't know what they really mean. They are pro anti-coercive cooperation. Sounds great. They are pro freedom.
Sounds nice.
And they are pro creativity.
Sounds great. Buzzwords. Literal fucking corporate buzzwords.
Yeah.
I wish you were wrong. I wish you were wrong. Okay, but most charitable reading.
Okay, what's the most charitable reading?
It's the most charitable I could conjure. There's fronts of leftist struggle. Yes, they don't all need the same thing at bottom. I don't even really want to call it leftist. It's like anti-capitalist. There's anti-capitalist struggle, including civil rights, including, like, the intersection of money and the legal system, for example, or race and the legal system, for example. And the middle of that is, like, we can't coerce someone to join our side, so we got to put our energies into the thing that's in front of us. And if everyone did that in all of their little fields of resistance and fostered community events and fostered unionization efforts, and if everyone were to just push on the thing in front of them, we wouldn't need some scope of a grand movement to be organizing everything that would eventually cause fracturing and all this. If everyone focused on the thing in front of them and said, what can I do best with this? Because there's always an option in front of you, right? There's always an option of resistance. Most of us don't choose to do it, including myself. We don't choose to do it because it takes a lot of effort. It takes a huge amount of effort.
Yes.
So we don't want to force it, but we don't want to give up. But we need more radical subjectivities, which is plural and displaced and multiple, instead of trying to organize something top down or waiting for Bernie Sanders to come along and do it because he's not going to do it.
Great. That's a great job on that, steel man. That's actually very similar to how I explain. By the way, when I'm talking on this podcast, I think a lot of people would be surprised if they actually read my writing. In my actual writing, I'm extremely charitable. I'm as charitable as I possibly can be. Because for me, it's like I only want to make arguments against something when I feel like I've given it the most charitable treatment. And what you just said there, Pills, is like very similar to how I describe Hart and Negri, like at the end when I kind of say, okay, well, what are they actually trying to argue for? And that's very similar. It's like, if we can all kind of just push in our little corners, if we can be politically mobilized for the things that are in front of us that we could fight against, then maybe there would be hope. But again, just as you said, that takes a lot of effort. And that's where I bring in my kind of phenomenological critique, that you're kind of forgetting about the habit body. You're forgetting about what we actually are as human beings, like where we live 90% of the time. That expectation, if that's what you're building your politics on, good fucking luck.
What you thinking, Eric?
I mean, we're talking about capitalism here. So we're talking about, we're almost like we're fish and we're trying to talk about the water that we're swimming in. So obviously it's going to be difficult to sort of, you know, step back and grasp. Like, we're talking from an anti-capitalist perspective here. So you either have to be on board with anti-capitalism or you're just going to think all this is nonsense. And I'm not saying if you're anti-capitalist, you're going to buy into this.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
But you know, you do sort of have to be in that vicinity to appreciate what's going on here. And they're talking about the organization of work and the production of subjectivity, right? So the production of subjectivities seems to me to go back to Marx, saying, you know, like it's not a question of finding the revolutionary subject and then just lifting them up and pushing them forward as the revolutionary class.
Yeah, it's production.
It's about, you know, the revolution itself creates the revolutionary subject, and then when the revolution is over, that subject disappears. And whatever happens after that happens. And if a new revolution is, you know, required, a new revolutionary struggle, then new subjectivities have to be produced. And right now, you know, we all work, right? The three of us work. We work for money. And do we have control of our workplace? What do we work for, right? What does that situation, which is pretty common to capitalism, where you work for wages and you don't really have a say over what you produce and what is done with it. It meets you in the market, right? So it seems to me what they're saying is, you know, we're atomized into different productive areas and we have to compete with each other because our products are exchanged on the market. So we are proxies for this capitalist competition, and that needs to stop. That needs to go away. The new subject is cooperative, right? You have cooperative workers working together to produce the basis of a thriving society. Not atomized working places, working for the profit of whoever owns what you're working on. That model can't move forward. We can't move forward with that model. We have to liberate work. That's what they're saying. What is the liberation of work? And the liberation of work needs to come alongside the liberation of subjectivity. But which is pretty much what we were talking about through the whole opening phrase, is like subjectivity. What do we think of things? How do we think? What is our ideology? How do we look at this stuff? Right? Is work, you know, if I say I don't want to work to a boomer, they're going to say, well, what are you going to do to live? How are you going to make money? Because money is all important, right? There you go. You're just in the capitalist ideology. We can't valorize capital like that if we're going to move forward into a communist society. Because it's just the definitional thing. Capitalism, capital is value in motion, and capitalism is the valorization of money. How do we get away from that and design workplaces around a new philosophy of living?
This is the thing that Marxists will disagree with them on, and what makes this, I think, post-Marxist. It's because, exactly like you said, I think you're right. They said we should not associate subjectivity with work anymore, which is something that Marx did, which is something that Ricardo did, which is something that Adam Smith did. Like, your freedom is your labor, and you're unfree because you have to sell your labor in order to survive. So they should say, or they're saying, kind of, we got to get rid of the work aspect of it and get rid of the labor theory of value also, which again, this is abstract. So what do you mean you get rid of it? You still have to work. And then my Marxist pushback against this, I was like, this is making me feel more Marxist, not less. But work, if we're talking about class struggle, is as close to a universal goal that anyone could think up, right? It, like, work intersect, if you want to talk about intersectionality, work intersects with every other oppression. There's two classes, those who labor,
yes,
and those who extract the surplus value / those who have accumulated wealth based on extracted surplus value. Like, there's only two. So I was like, why do you want to get rid of that thing? Because they said, and I'll quote it, it's clear that the discourse on workers' centrality and hegemony are thoroughly defunct and that they cannot serve as a basis for the organization of new political and productive alliances or even simply as a point of reference. They want labor to be out of the equation for the subject. And I was thinking, like, that's our, even if we're getting fucking owned every day by capitalism, literally owned, then that's still the most universal point of reference, I would think.
But work is still something they want to preserve as a goal, right? You work.
Like free work, liberated work?
Yeah. I mean, they put it in, again, they say this in a million different ways. Things like, you know, break the encirclement of the capitalist and socialist organization of work, right? It's not that they want to get rid of work. And we live in some kind of, what's the phrase, fully automated luxury communism? No, we're still going to work, but it has to be organized not on capitalist terms and not on market socialist terms. Because if you keep the market in there, then you keep the competition in there. And if you keep the competition in there, then we, as one set of workers in one sector, can never cooperate with another workers in other sectors because we're in fucking competition with them. We have to form, you know, I mean, what I thought is it seemed to be leaning towards more like workers' cooperatives where people have shares in the workplace and syndicalism and cooperation between, you know, groups of workers, which is the closest thing you could possibly really describe to what communism might look like. Because again, capitalism is, we are fish and that's our fucking water. So every time we're saying, well, what are the suggestions? What's the new stuff here? What's like, what's the way forward that they're suggesting here? You're asking for a fucking Cassandra prophet to speak to the gods and ask about the future and how the future should be. That's a fucking ridiculous request to put on anybody. I mean, I'm gonna go read Hayek or the Chicago Boys, and then I'm gonna ask them the same fucking question. Well, how do you think society should go forward? What's their answer going to be? Nothing. It's not going to be anything. It's not going to be any more developed than this. It's just going to be deregulate. That's all it's going to be. Deregulate the markets. The market, everything should be organized through the market. Like, okay, well, this is the opposite of that, isn't it? Everything should not be. In fact, there probably should be no market or a very little, you know, corner for the market.
Not that I'm sympathetic to those kinds of libertarians, but that is a much more comprehensive, a much more concrete vision, to be honest, because it's actually telling you that something that it's going to be organized around. This
it's
is just
lazy
going to be organized
and complicit in the problems that organization is already causing.
They don't even go so far. Like, I agree with your charitable reading, but they don't even go so far as to say,
yes, so do I,
form a syndicate at the job and like take over. They don't even say that. It's more like, yeah, create your subjectivity with creativity in mind rather than oppression in mind. Like, what
they give you literally no practical like advice on what you should do.
Maybe they don't have to. I don't know. But if I knew that they weren't going to, I wouldn't have read this book.
They do. It's abstract. You know, they say, obviously, again, as I just said, it's fucking obvious. They say, fucking obviously, we have no model of organizational replacement.
Right, yeah.
But at least we know what we no longer want.
Well, that's my point. My point is, like, all they give us is a vision of what they're against.
Yeah, well, it's harder to imagine the end of the world.
It's really easy. It's really easy to just say what you're against. I think it's a lot harder to think carefully.